From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 14th day of March 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Gary Schnitke will be here with his Farm Doc Daily article for today. You can go read it right now if you'd like. It's all about price, times yield, and trend yields for both corn and soybeans by county, probably your county, across the whole of the nation. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the agricultural energies with Archer Financial Services' Stephen Platt and discuss the weather forecast, too, with Don Day of Day Weather right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. Do join me tonight if you have the opportunity to come into Champaign County at the Farm Bureau building. It's out on the west side of Champaign there at the Extension office, too. We'll have a Will Ag panel tonight that includes Bill Mayer, Pete Manhart, and Merrill Crowley. It starts at 6:30, open to everyone, so if you want to come out, please do so. Again, that's tonight at the Champaign County Farm Bureau. Our last Will Ag panel of the season before you get into the field. That despite the very cold weather forecast we have for the next several days. Let's turn our attention to the marketplace directly for the day. We're now joined by John Hester. He's in for Wayne Nelson this afternoon at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Staying warm there, are you, John?
I'm trying. I've got my jacket on.
It's a cold, cold day. So tell me why it is that soybeans moved down by a dime in the near term.
I think, it's probably about a three-fold thing. The crop's getting better in South America every day. Informant, the government has alluded to the fact that there will be 3 to 4 million more acres of soybeans. And China has slowed down their buying a little bit. Plus, it's rumored that Mexico's buying some stuff out of South America. So I think, you add all those four things up together, and that's pretty negative to soybeans.
And does it look to get any better between now and the time we get to the March 31st planting perspectives report?
We ought to have a little bounce somewhere between now and then, but, from what area we'll bounce, I have no idea. But, and I think the planting intentions depend a lot, or the numbers depend a lot on what the bean price is going to do. If they come in, let's say 6 million acres more than they're talking, that's going to really be hard-pressed on the soybean price. But the flip side of that is it ought to be a little more friendly maybe to the corn side, because that'd be a few less acres of corn to plant.
I was going to say, corn, in fact, did hold today. Did that surprise you?
Yes, a little bit, but China was rumored to buy some corn out of the Pacific Northwest today, so that rumor may be the fact that corn stayed reasonably strong.
I think I saw that rumor. This was to blend off, effectively, I suppose, some of the grain stocks they have in the northwestern part of their country, trying to find some good corn to put in with that so that they could get it into feed supplies, I would suppose. Can we expect more of that in the future, and would that be good for the marketplace?
Oh, I think any time we sell China anything, that's good for our marketplace. And they've got a lot of people to feed over there and a lot of livestock to feed, and they need meal and they need DDGs and they need corn. So, I think we don't want to run them away. That would really hurt our marketing potential here in the United States if they weren't buying anything.
Hey, one last item to discuss. It is one day before the deadline for crop insurance. What should producers consider, in your opinion?
I think most of the people that I've talked to here, they're going to take the same insurance that they had last year, whether it be 75, 80, 85% of coverage. They're just trying to lock in where they won't lose their shirt if something bad happens.
Hey, thanks so much, John. We appreciate you being with us, and we'll talk with you or Wayne again next week.
Thank you, Todd.
John Hester is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, farm groups plan this week to press lawmakers to include agriculture in developing any tax reform packages. American Farm Bureau Federation senior economist Bob Young says the key for Farm Bureau is a lower effective tax rate that actually could benefit farmers.
We want to make sure that we also talk about individual tax reform, and in fact, are sure going to want to make sure that we're talking about tax reductions at the end of the day as opposed to tax increases. We're also worried about the cost recovery, accelerated cost recovery, cash accounting, very important for agriculture and yet not necessarily a guaranteed at this point in time. Interest expense, you know, we feel that a farmer ought to be able to talk about deduction of all of their interest expense, not just interest expense that would be offset by interest income. Also want to talk about repealing estate taxes.
Over at the National Corn Growers Association, the Senior Director for Public Policy, Sam Willett, says he has a list.
Cash method of accounting, the three-year income averaging. Our growers are very interested in capital gains tax rates. And, you know, you put aside those year-to-year provisions that it can have a real impact on net farm income, the impact of estate tax exemptions. Others would include, of course, Section 179 expensing and the deductions farmers have fertilizer and lime expenses.
Also likely on the agenda, biofuels and other alternative energy tax breaks. Willett admits tax reform is not in the speed lane this year. Obamacare repeal and replacement is. However, he argues reforming health care is key to advancing tax reform, either this year or next. Two other items of note today, both related to trade. President Donald Trump will host Chinese President Xi Jinping in April at Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida. That's the winter White House. The two-day meeting is tentatively scheduled for April 6th and 7th. Reuters says the planned summit would follow a string of other recent U.S.-Chinese meetings and conversations seeking to reaffirm ties following months of strong rhetoric from Trump against China. During his presidential campaign, Trump, of course, accused China of unfair trade policies, among other claims. And on that note, the European Union is pushing for free trade agreements in the Asia-Pacific region. The EU is aggressively moving forward on free trade talks in the region, and the National Pork Producers Council is urging the United States to do the same. The U.S. backed out, of course, of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement earlier this year, which would have improved market access for agricultural products into the region. EU trade officials have recently met with counterparts in New Zealand and the Philippines to explore other free trade options. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist. Gary, thanks for being with us. You took a look at trend line yields for corn and soybeans by county across the United States. That sounds like a lot of work, but what you were trying to get to, I believe, was price times yield and where farmers really are compared to where they might be given trends in their counties. What
did
you find?
Yeah, absolutely right. So what we did was we took 2016 and calculated for each major corn and soybean county the trend yield for that county and then looked at the actual yield. And so if the actual yield was 220 and their trend yield was 200, we would say they were 20 bushels above trend yield. So what we were trying to do is look at those areas where we had higher yields than we should expect relative to the productivity land and those that had lower. And those areas where we have lower yields relative to trends are the ones where grain farms are going to have lower incomes compared to everybody else.
And you can see that on the maps that you provide. On the other hand, there are some places, for instance, like Sangamon County, Illinois, which would be an example that you use, and I think probably an example for many of the counties across the United States. Corn, what did those numbers show?
So if we're looking at Sangamon County, and most of the counties in the western Corn Belt and some northern and central Illinois had above trend yields, and Sangamon County had a yield of 222 bushels per acre. That compares to a trend yield of 194. So Sangamon County was actually 22 plus 6 is 28 bushels above trend. And that has a sizable impact on revenue, right? So we took that that above trend, multiplied it by a 340 price, which is what WASD is projecting right now, and found that that just above trend added $95 compared to normal yield for Sangamon County. And that's a significant amount, obviously. So in those areas of the world where we had above trend yields, we have higher incomes.
Were most corn and soybean countywide yields above trend line, and you went back to 1972 to get those trends?
Yeah, so we used data from 1972 up to the present to fit our linear trends. There are areas of the world that have below trend yields. Most notably close to us is Ohio and Indiana. Ohio particularly had below trend yields on corn. The whole counties right along the Mississippi River, starting in southern Indiana, Illinois, and going all the way down through Arkansas, Boot Hill, Missouri, Mississippi, Louisiana had below trend yields. New York and Pennsylvania had below trend yields. So pretty much, you know, counties, a lot of the counties were in the eastern part of the United States that had below trend yields on corn. Soybeans, on the other hand, most everybody had above trend yields. We had an exceptionally good yielding year on soybeans. The areas where we'd had below trend yields, or a lot of counties had below trend yields, again, were New York and Pennsylvania.
Coming back to Sangamon County, I want to get to their income. When you use Sangamon County trend yield at 194 bushels to the acre, how does it compare to actual income? So you multiply it by 340, right?
Yeah. So one. So if we take 222 bushels per acre times 340 price, which is what WASD is projecting right now. Obviously, farmers can differ from that depending on how they market their corn. But 340, that gets us $755 of revenue, crop revenue from corn in Sangamon County. Last year, there was some reasonably good ARC payments, so add that to it, and you know, probably $40 to $50 an acre on average from ARC, and that gets you close to $800 of revenue last year. This coming year, we won't have as much on ARC. And if we go back to sort of trend line yields for Sangamon County, getting 220 rather than getting that 222 bushel yield, getting 194, we would have to have a 390 price to have the same crop revenue in 2017 as we had in 2016. So,
hey, Gary, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can read more from him on the 2016 corn and soybean yields put into perspective as it relates to countywide trend yields for most counties across the United States on the FarmDoc Daily website. Now let's turn our attention to the agricultural energies. We're joined by Stephen Platt. He's at Archer Financial Services out of Chicago. Stephen, thanks for being with us. We've been watching crude oil for some time. Last year during the winter months, it depressed commodity prices. This year at this point, we're beginning to trade back lower. Can you tell me why that's the case?
Well, after being in a rather tight range for really since December when they came in with their agreement and production curbs, the market fell rather sharply here the past week or so, and has reached levels not seen since they came in with their agreement. A lot of factors have played into it. Some of them we talked about. This break, I think, has been long in coming and pretty much has responded to some of the fundamental influences caused by increases in U.S. production, along with the fact that certain members, such as Russia, have not really participated in the agreement fully like they said they would. I think that, along with the fact that we are still looking at rather high inventories in the U.S. and increasing inventory levels here the past few weeks, all combined to put pressure on the market, particularly at a time when it was vulnerable to liquidation pressure due to a rather sizable build in the net long spec position of large traders. So overall, I don't think the break was not justified. In fact, I think it was needed by the market to really respond to some of the pressures that had been building here since the beginning of the year. I do think one has to be cautious, though, in terms of looking at the market following through here, that some potential is there to maybe book some diesel needs as you move into harvest, that particularly with some upcoming meetings of OPEC. And I think a real desire by the Saudis, particularly ahead of their IPO for Aramco, to maintain this market as we move into mid-year to maintain valuations. I think that, along with the OPEC meetings coming up, sets the market up to maintain some support. And if the demand comes on, as we've been talking, from the emerging markets and also some of the OECD countries, I think we do have a good chance to eventually take out those highs that we saw back in January.
Do you have target lows as well or not?
Well, I'm pretty much right there. We've been talking in terms of our newsletter that we put out out of Archer Financial for at least the 47 or 49.50 and 47.50 here as a possibility, and we have reached those points. And I think the market is at a pretty key juncture, at least on the diesel here toward this under 150, which is some of the best prices we've seen this year. So I think one probably needs to at least do some booking of some of those needs as we move into harvest, particularly with some of the price pressures we're seeing on the grains, that if you can make these prices work, I think you have to look at taking them in.
Hey, thanks for looking forward into the season for producers and their needs. We appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, and have a great day.
Stephen Platt is with Archer Financial Services. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason on this 14th day of March. It's a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day is here. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Let's start on the East Coast, Don, where they're experiencing nor'easter, and it's a pretty good-sized one and really kind of late in the season. What do we know?
Yeah, it's textbook nor'easter, and we have seen early March storms go up the East Coast, early to mid-March storms before. They just don't happen very frequently this time of year. Inland is where they're really getting socked, although you'll probably hear news reports that New York City hasn't received much or as much snow as expected. You don't go very far inland, and at the time of this broadcast, we'll probably have areas pushing or exceeding 18 inches already in portions of New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and portions of eastern Pennsylvania.
That is a lot of snow. Will it stick around for very long there?
It will. Because on the back side of this is some very cold air, and it's going to pour into the Midwest and Corn Belt as well. We're going to be looking at temperatures going far below normal as we get into tonight and the next couple of nights. Then over the weekend, a clipper system coming out of the Great Lakes may spread more snow into the Northeast over the weekend. Not as big of a storm, but enough to keep them in a very wintry pattern.
Winter wheat areas have been in need of moisture. Are they getting some?
They're not. However, there is a pattern change coming next week and into the end of the month and into early April that is favoring those winter wheat areas to pick up some precipitation. However, it's probably a good week away before that gets started. So in the short term, they're still going to be suffering some really mild and dry weather there.
A few weeks ago, we were talking about all the rainfall in California, the problems that it was creating. They had been in drought for 5 years. Where do they stand today?
Well, there is not one area of California that's in a severe drought category right now. There are still areas in Southern California that are at certain drought levels, but they're on the low end of the scale. Now, they've hit a dry patch. However, starting next week and into early April, California is going to get back into the storm track and they're going to see more precipitation coming. So they're catching a break, but the rain season for them is not over.
In South America, Brazil in particular, they're at the tail end of the harvest season for first crop, planting second crop, the beginning of that. What are conditions like, for instance, in Mato Grosso?
Those areas are looking at a pretty decent pattern in terms of temperatures near average and precipitation that's looking pretty good. Brazil is an area that has had a little bit more of a stable pattern, not so many ups and downs as compared to Argentina. So going into their second season, looking good.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, inviting you tonight to join me at the Champaign County Farm Bureau Building. That's the U of I Extension Building 2. It's out on the west side of Champaign, easy to find. And we'll have one of our Will Ag panels there, including these folks, Pete Manhart, Bill Mayer, and Merrill Crowley. Starts at 6:30. Drop by and join us if you can. Again, that's tonight at 6:30, sponsored by the Champaign County Farm Bureau, along with University of Illinois Extension at the County Farm Bureau Building right here in Champaign, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.